I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we head into the second part of our mini-series on global trade, where we talk about all things sweet, from chocolate and sugarcane to the cultural festival that accompanied the growth of the date industry in the U.S.
They're using this romance and fantasy to say, dates are exotic and you should consume them.
I like to think of the food that we eat as archaeological artifacts, in part because the history of humanity is in the stands in your produce market.
It's not like other foods. We have very, like, personal feelings about chocolate.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
Ah, well, as we've discussed, that's a loaded question, but
I'm hanging in there.
I'm still vertical. But Souther, I have a question for you. Do you remember, what was it, 2 months, 5 months, 6 years ago, when we had our friend Eugene on from coming to us live from Nairobi in Kenya? You remember?
Oh, of course, the Rum Bishop.
Yeah, the Rum Bishop. Well, I've been chatting with him because I'm a friendly guy, so is he. And we were talking a little bit about what's going on with his farm these days. And like, you know, let's be honest, everybody, things have been better. He's having some tough times out there. And
right, because he's a major advocate for of course rum, but he also runs like a sort of a community farm, right, where they're growing all sorts of things that are and all sorts of things that are not indigenous to his area, right?
Exactly, and that's kind of the thing about him that I remember most in the interview is like his real sort of commitment to, you know, getting people to understand where their food comes from and kind of have a greater appreciation for the land. And I love that approach because I think that if you have, you know, a better understanding of where your food comes from and how it's grown, you'll be a better steward of the environment, but also kind of a better steward of yourself. You know, I think that I fervently believe that we as a nation would eat healthier if a tour of a hot dog plant was a required part of elementary school education in this country.
Yeah. Nobody wants to know how the sausage is made.
No, they don't. It's a really cool mission, a lot of community outreach, and in a tough spot, like I said, like a lot of people right now. So we actually have a GoFundMe up for him. If anyone remembers that episode or is just curious about the mission, feel free to drop us a line. Or better yet, go to GoFundMe and look for Support Bishop Botany Farm. That's the title. We're going to see if we can give him a boost and really, you know, help him on this really important mission of building this, not just a farm, but like a community of people that can, you know, understand and have a better, deeper, richer appreciation for, you know, the land and the food that we eat three times a day. Like I've recycled his quote from that episode so many times about, like, you know, you need a doctor once a year, you need a lawyer once every 3 years, you need a farmer three times a day.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the work that he's doing over there is, it's important, you know, especially in an area where he's at, where it's a bit underserved in that regard. And he's educating people on food and foodstuffs and where they come from, and also, you know, promoting a healthier approach to those things in general. So, man, this is a great idea. I'm glad you did this, and I'm glad you brought it up. We'll obviously make sure to get that into the show notes, and then I'll put a link to that on my Instagram as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I'll also be putting it out on my Instagram. And yeah, like you said, it'll be in the show notes, probably in the Heritage Radio Network, the Speakeasy Instagram as well. And yeah, just a cool opportunity to support someone who's doing some great stuff. Cause that's been, you know, I hesitate to say that there has been anything particularly good about what we've all been living through over the past 12 months, but I have enjoyed the ability that it's given us on this show to reach out and connect to some really great folks that might not have been able to swing by a pizza joint in the middle of the day on a Wednesday in Bushwick to hang out and chat with us. It's been really cool to meet these folks and you know, hear about what they're doing and what they're going through in other parts of the world.
Oh, indeed. If there's any even glimmer of silver lining to this dark cloud, it is that our reach has become so much more distant. You know, over the past year, we've had guests on from all over the world, which we often do, but they're here in the studio with us live in New York City, whereas now we can just ring them up and Zencaster in or whatever this nonsense is from our virtual studios. You know, I'm sitting at home with my laptop and you're at your home with your laptop and you know, speaking of that, we've got guests from out of town who are virtually in town today. Who are we going to talk to today, Greg?
Today we have Camilla and Chris live from Charleston, which I believe is is ranked the friendliest city in the world. Correct me if I'm wrong, folks. But they are here with Volley Tequila Soda. Welcome, Camilla and Chris. How are you?
Hey, Damon. Hey, Souther. We're pumped to be here. Thanks for having us.
Damon couldn't make it today. That's Greg hanging out with me.
Hey.
Yeah, so glad to have you guys on from Charleston. Probably better weather down there than we're having here. It's a very gray, overcast day. It was snowing yesterday. I'm certain that the weather's probably nicer down there. I love that town. I grew up in the Deep South, and I think that Charleston, to me, when I walk around that city, looks like if Savannah, Georgia, and New Orleans were smashed together, that's what Charleston is. It's such a beautiful town.
I think that's spot on. Yeah, we actually hadn't been here very much at all before we moved here, but we heard it was amazing. Our Camila's sister was moving here, and we said we need a change of pace from New York and packed our things and moved down here. And actually a big part of it was we had a little guy on the way. Oh, nice. And just need a little more space. So we're loving it here.
Yeah, that's how long have you been down there?
Sorry?
How long have you been down there?
We came down in March, so end of March of 2020. So
oh man, you bugged out right on time.
Yeah, we got lucky on that.
Yeah, you saw it coming and just bolted. Well, good for you. And I'm sure the living is a lot easier down there and more spacious, as you mentioned, for sure. Well, congratulations on that great move. So does that mean that Volley is based there?
Yeah, it is. It was originally based in New York, but we have since then moved the HQ to Charleston, and it is a Charleston company now.
And that's fantastic. So let's typically, you know, how the sort of cadence of the show goes is we're going to talk a little bit about kind of your past for this first segment, and then we'll come back in and talk about what you're doing in the current day. So talk to us about, like, you know, your beginnings in the sort of beverage industry. Where did you get your start?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been in the beverage business for about 8 years now. I started a mixer company called the American Cocktail Company 8 years ago, shortly after graduating college. And the goal was to really make something that you could make a high-end cocktail with without having to really know, you know, mastering mixology or going to a high-end bar and spending a very large amount of money. But now the average person or a bar could use this tool to make a good quality cocktail. And I partnered with a bartender, and we went through this long journey of figuring out how do you actually take an idea into a product? How do you brand it? How do you make it? How do you deliver it? Packaging, all those different things. We did not know what we were doing, but we learned, and eventually we started winning some awards, and our products are still sold in Whole Foods, and we private label for a bunch of different retailers, and we became pretty good at making mixers. The problem was, well, I guess you should jump in and share, Camila, how you played a role in the ACC journey.
Yeah, I came from a banking background. And after 4 years in banking, I needed a bit of a change. Chris and I were already dating at this point. And so I said, you know what, you're doing something interesting. I'm going to come and clean up your books. I have seen your books and they need a lot of organizing. So I, no.
Yeah. This is a garbage pile. And this is a garbage pile and someone lit it on fire. I'm going to put it out and fix it.
So it took a while for me to organize those books. I jumped in with some operational help and we started a subscription box where we send 4 cocktails with our mixer and, a whole recipe card and a garnish and all that to consumers. And just how do we get that going? So Chris and I worked very closely on that. And then from there, we came up with this idea to start Volley.
I was saying the problem that we realized was that we weren't drinking as many craft cocktails. So we were making all these mixers and the business is running smoothly and everything's great, but if you're making these products, you got to enjoy them too. When we go out to a bar or when it was a normal thing to go to a wedding or friend's house, we would have a tequila and soda and a squeeze of lime or grapefruit. That became our go-to just because we found that we could still be productive the next day and not still have fun at night, but get things done the next day without such a bad hangover. And we saw these seltzers popping up and we said, maybe this is exactly what we're looking for. You know, it's a clean alternative. And it was just a little disappointing because when we looked under the hood, we really didn't find what we were looking for.
Yeah, I mean, when you say we saw these seltzers popping up, like, yeah, the RTD, ready-to-drink alcoholic seltzer sector has grown over 300% the past 2 years in succession. I mean, that's a huge market to leap into, right?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it proves that there's plenty of opportunity in that market, but it also proves that there's plenty of competition right now.
Yeah, lots of opportunity, lots of competition, and all those stats have definitely not gone unnoticed by the big players, mm-hmm. and they're claiming their spots on the shelf.
Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
I was going to say, so talk to me about, because, you know, it sounds like you looked at these things and it sounds like you're like, well, you know, we could do this, but better. And there was something that we were talking about before the show that I had never heard of this term before, but now I'm fascinated about it. Can you elaborate on the Dorito effect?
Yeah. That book was on my list of two reads about 5 years ago, and I kind of forgot about it, and I was happy to see it in the notes. Yeah, so I'm going to circle back to it. Yeah, talk about the Dorito effect.
Okay, you need to read it. It's a quick read. I was reading it one summer, the summer of 2018, and I actually finished it on the Long Island Railroad coming back from a weekend out east to the city. And I was just so annoyed because I felt totally lied to. And I like went on this whole lecture to Chris about what we're eating. And I'm not a huge super health freak at all. I love food and I love to enjoy what I'm eating. But I also like to know generally what I'm eating and what I'm putting into my body. So it discusses the mystery behind the word natural flavors versus artificial flavors and the mystery that encompasses what it means. No one really knows what it means and what are in natural flavors. They're all proprietary ingredients. So for example, let's say a grapefruit flavor, it can say natural grapefruit flavor and it may not have any grapefruit in it. We don't know what's in that natural grapefruit flavor. The components that make up the flavor are all natural, but the flavor itself is derived, it comes from a lab. So one of the most shocking ingredients that the Dorito effect discusses is vanilla flavoring and how one of the components in natural vanilla flavoring is castoreum, which is a goo excreted from the butt of a beaver. So if you see
it,
flavoring, yeah, you know what you're eating. But yeah, so it really, it sparked from there, and it was just more of Chris and I being conscious about not trying to find something that doesn't have natural flavors on it. It's almost impossible because it's the fourth most common ingredient in food in the United States. So it is very difficult.
Jesus, I have to assume that's right next to salt and sugar.
Exactly. and water.
Yep. Yeah. So it's difficult, but we think there's a movement towards cleaner ingredients, and at least just awareness and knowing what actually is going into your body. But
yeah, absolutely. You know, I was a chef for many years before, you know, getting behind the bar. You know, long ago, Michael Pollan wrote a pretty simple approach. You know, when you're shopping at the grocery store, if you see an ingredient on a product that your grandmother didn't have on her shelves at home, then don't buy that product.
Yes.
Right. So like my grandmother didn't have, you know, polysorbate 80 or natural flavors, you know. So, you know, I just try and steer away from products that say things like that as best I can. But that becomes arduous and a lot of work, right?
It does. Yeah.
Also, because it seems so innocent. I mean, someone comes to a store and they see this, that, and that, which are all recognizable things, and then natural flavors. They say, well, natural sounds good. Flavor, I guess that, you know, doesn't raise any red flags. Let's get it.
Yeah, it's tough because there are natural flavors that you know can come from, let's say, grapefruit extract is derived from grapefruit, whereas a grapefruit natural flavor, you have no idea what's in it. So the term natural is
probably something from a beaver, I guess.
Well, yeah, also beaver. So.
Natural beaver flavoring.
Yeah. I mean, even that raises a question. You know, my partner at my business is vegan, and he runs many vegan establishments, you know. So I'm shocked to hear that some of these natural flavorings come from animals, and I assume that vegans are ill aware.
That's very true.
Very true.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, I'm not a vegan myself, but I'm conscious of that now that I run a business that is vegan. So, you know, that's shocking. Luckily, you know, we make almost everything that we serve in-house, so we don't have to worry about that too much, but I'll certainly raise an eyebrow on ingredients of things that we bring in.
Yeah, it's shocking stuff. And the you know, people think about food and say technology is, food is a place that technology can't really affect, because you cook and you eat the thing, and day after day that's going to be something that, you know, technology can't really change. But we are seeing that, you know, whether it's with the plant-based food, technology is really making a impact there. But on these flavors, this is incredible technology. If you go to these flavor houses, these are billion-dollar public companies, and they have fascinating facilities where everyone's walking around in lab coats, and they can come up with they can mimic any flavor. The thing is that it never ends up tasting like the real thing, but it tastes, you know, the Jolly Rancher version of the real thing. But it's become so pervasive in all of the foods that we're kind of losing the appreciation of one versus the other. I think, you know, someone may even pick something that is made with a natural flavor taste wise versus the real thing, which is, that's just sad, I think.
Exactly. Well, we have this problem a lot, and Souther, I think the biggest culprit in the bar line is passion fruit. You know, people know what they expect passion fruit to taste like because it's not a particularly common ingredient in your supermarkets. And when you give them an actual like slice or like, you know, a puree of passion fruit, they kind of like, they make a face of like, why is it so sour? And you're like, because that's how this thing tastes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the actual flavor of this.
Sure. The difference between banana and banana flavor, or grape and grape flavor, or grape and purple. right. But I think it all comes down to its aroma, right? I talk about it all the time. Aroma is 90% of flavor, and it's oleolytic, right? Because we only taste five things: sweet, sour, salty, bitter, my favorite, and umami. So everything else is coming from the aroma. So I understand that these flavor houses are mostly, frankly, just aromatics. They're really just perfume houses, right? Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's stop talking about those jerks. and take a quick break. We're going to come back and keep talking with the team from Volley and how they don't use any of that junk we just talked about. So stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we are back. You are listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Today we're talking with Camilla and Chris of Volley Tequila Soda, who are bravely going up against the juggernaut of all natural flavors, quote unquote. So I can obviously, you know, anyone who listens to this show appreciates, you know, knowing where their ingredients come from and knowing that, you know, when you buy something that is vanilla flavored, it's flavored with an actual vanilla bean pod and not, you know, something that came out of the back end of a beaver. But, you know, it seems like that when we were talking, that market for these quote unquote natural flavors is so pervasive that going up against that must have been a huge uphill battle when y'all were starting. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, the early days of Volley Tequila Soda and convincing people that, you know, no, when we say natural ingredients, we mean things you actually know what they look like and can buy in a store.
Yeah, this journey's been going on for 2 years, even though we just launched into the market in July of last year. It's been in the works for 2 years, and that encompassed, you know, making the product, the branding, but also all the legal steps. And that was a big part where the TTB is who regulates your product labels and every step of the products. It's not the FDA for alcohol. And so with the package, we actually were told that we couldn't put 100% agave tequila and organic juice on the product label. What was it, Camila? You were on the compliance thing.
Yeah, I work on the compliance side. So they fall under categories, and our category was tequila with natural flavors, and we had to put a stink up and saying you can put us in that category, but we're not putting that on our can because we don't have natural flavors. So why are we going to associate ourselves with a product that uses natural flavors?
Right, because your whole stand was against the natural flavor.
Exactly. It was like we would be defeating the whole purpose of starting the brand. And we're like, we've phrased it as, why would we lie to the consumer and tell them there's something in there that's not in there?
And what an unusual battle to have to fight, to say, I'm doing the right thing.
That was what was shocking.
You think it would be the other way. You think that these guys who are using those synthetics would have to step forward and be like, this is synthetic. We have to fight to say that we're doing the wrong thing. Why do you have to fight to do the right thing?
Right. And it wasn't just that. We actually tried to be a lot more transparent about a lot of things. So on the nutritional panel, we wanted to put sugar content,
just the normal added nutritional,
sugar, like what's on all other packages. And we we were asked to remove sugar from our nutritional panel, which, and put protein in there. And I was like, guys, this is this is tequila with juice. Like, there's no protein in this, obviously. Like, we're not putting whey powder in here. Like, what are you talking about? And remove sugar. Like, that's what you need to know if you're drinking something. So it's interesting. It's something that I would love to pursue further, but we pick our battles, and one day, hopefully, we'll be able to put sugar on there.
It was so shocking that I had to put in, let me just write this very clearly to you. And I emailed the TTB person. I'm like, so you would like me to remove sugar and added sugar from this nutritional panel? We cannot include that there. And she said, yes. I was like, okay, well, that's what we're going to do here. But it was,
yeah. If you ever saw the movie Super Size Me by Morgan Spurlock, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
There's a whole section in there where they talk about labeling from the FDA, and how, if you'll notice, everything that gets labeled, which is by the way, everything, including water, gets a label. There's the amount that of whatever the product, you know, carbohydrates, how many carbohydrates are in here by the gram, and then a percentage, which is your daily allowance. There is no percentage next to sugar, because the sugar lobbied so hard to not have a percentage put on there, because if they did, you'd wipe out 100% of your sugar intake on your first meal of the day.
Yeah. So actually that just changed. What was it, like a year ago or so? They made an update, and they added, it was a big breakthrough that they required an added line that says added sugar. And there was a big lobbying for what that percentage would be. And it is far above what the daily intake is suggested to be. And so, yeah, it's still, even though they've gotten that on there, it's still a grossly misaligned number.
Yeah.
Was that when you say there was a lobbying campaign, was it you just writing a bunch of different emails, just being like, I want to put sugar on here. Let me put my sugar on this can.
Hey, I thought about it.
Well, I mean, you know, setting aside educating, you know, the Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, which, you know, you're braver individuals than me for taking that on.
Yeah,
is there also
a
level of educating the consumer that has to go into this? Because, I mean, I've learned stuff just in the last 20 minutes about, you know, air quotes, natural flavors that I didn't before. Like, how do you go about showing people that, no, what's in here really is different? It's not this proprietary synthetic stuff. It really is stuff that you know. And what was sort of your approach to get the average person to realize that what you were doing was different?
Yeah, so that's been what the brand is all about, is telling, how do we figure out how to tell that story? And it makes it exciting, because it's not just a alcoholic can, a seltzer can that another one in the market, and let's see how we market it and get it to consumers. There's something that we want to tell everybody, and we tell it through the product, which is that real juice does settle. And we're doing that through our packaging, trying to communicate and bring people back to what they already know, that yes, real juice does settle. And you know that when you go to the juice aisle in the grocery store, because you can see it through the clear bottles, and you look and you say, oh, that must be good, because it's settled, I'm going to shake it up. But you can't see that in the can, because it's metal. So we have communication on the packaging, but all of our marketing is telling people to remember that real juice settles, and you need to flip the can. So we've got some exciting packaging updates that are coming up to tell that even more aggressively. But it's fun for us to come up with different ways to tell that. And it's through our advertising and just talking to you guys and different opportunities that we can remind people of what they're actually consuming. So it is a person by person. It's a very uphill battle. You know, the natural flavors have cornered the market. They're, as we said, the fourth most common ingredient in food. So there, no one really questions it. But that's a exciting battle. So we're pumped about it, and we want to keep getting the word out.
Well, let's talk about another battle that you're undergoing that is in the same vein, honestly. So, you know, you've picked up two axes to grind. Most of these, alcoholic seltzers are fermented products, which is effectively it's beer. But what you're saying is yours is seltzer water and tequila and then juice.
Yes,
exactly.
So like, how are you fighting that giant? You know, I feel like everyone who grabs a White Claw thinks to themselves, oh, I'm drinking vodka and soda, and it's not. It's beer.
Yes, that's so true. So that's actually how we also came up with the idea of Volley. So around the time when I finished the Dorito Effect, Chris and I were chatting, and these seltzers were popping up everywhere. And of course, they're light, they're refreshing. You drink it in a beer moment, or when you want to have rosé, like when it's really warm. They're very refreshing. So I, like you just said, thought this has got to be vodka. It's light and you don't really taste the alcohol in it. You don't taste any alcohol in it. So it's got to be vodka. And after so much Googling and reading, like, this is fermented cane sugar. What even is fermented cane sugar? I can't wrap my head around it. It was just still so mysterious that we were like, we need to create something with tequila. I drink tequila. Chris started drinking tequila. And we think that there's other people out there that want a good product. So we started this journey to create Volley, and it's definitely been interesting because we're under the RTD space, the ready to drink category, and that can encompass cocktails. So you could be drinking like an old fashioned, and that can be in the same category as Volley, where we really believe that Volley is in between the beer moment and the RTD, and even leaning towards the beer moment because it is such a refreshing drink. It is very light and the agave note is so subtle. So it has been a challenge in saying that, look, we're a tequila seltzer, but we're also a spiked seltzer because we're not that heavy cocktail that you can have one or two, but you may not want to drink all night long. And that's a different battle that we're facing, but I think that the category is so fluid right now and it's still being defined, that there's a lot of room for it.
And the other big part of this is cost. So these malt beverages, they're in a different tax category. So
absolutely. I was going to bring that up. That means that they can, I was going to bring that up based on cost of goods, right? Go ahead and say what you're going to say, but my end question is going to be, how does that affect the retail price for the consumer? Because the tax is going to be wildly different, right?
Tremendous cost differential. So you've got, before we talk about even importing a product that's made in a different country, you've got huge state excise taxes, which are different on a state-by-state basis. So, for example, in certain states, a spirit-based product has to pay $13 per case. And that's on our product, which is low, very low ABV, versus, you know, it's, if you had a higher ABV, like actually a bottle of tequila, it would be a huge amount. So when you're putting a case of Volley against a case of White Claw, the cost of goods might not be that different, but when you have a huge excise tax, it's night and day. You can't be on the shelf at the same price. So a Truly or White Claw are more in the 1.5 per can range, and you'll find these RTDs are more in the 3 to 4 range.
I mean, that's a huge differential, and I can't even believe that it's such a burden of tax on you, the maker. $13 a case seems, frankly, outrageous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, how is one supposed to create a product that is shelfable and marketable at such an incredible tax?
Yeah, it's an uphill battle.
Yeah, and I'm certain that, again, you went from your company that made non-alcoholic products to a company that makes alcoholic products, and then suddenly the world just turns upside down, right?
Yeah, we definitely do not incur those kinds of taxes with our product, and definitely not, there's a lot of challenges, also COVID and everything.
I mean, oh, well, of course, COVID, everybody's, yeah, everybody's over that for sure. But, you know, I meant more even in just the, you make a product that's non-alcoholic, you can sell it anywhere, anytime. You make a product that's alcoholic in the United States of America, and it's got different rules and laws for every state and, frankly, for every county in a lot of cases. So suddenly you're just up against this mountain of what I assume is just arduous paperwork.
100%. And also with the other products, we can literally just make it and ship it to whether it's a customer at home, a store, a bar, in anywhere in the country, or someone overseas. While here, there's a three-tier system that we have to abide by, which is quite complicated. You know, the manufacturer needs to sell to a distributor, distributor to a retailer, and retailer to the end customer. So direct to consumer, even though you can purchase our products nationwide on our website, it's not technically, you know, we're not technically selling it to you. We're facilitating a sale through retailers who are able to fulfill that order for you.
That's wild, man. But I mean, do you, the one thing that I keep coming back to is that I feel like your secret weapon is because you jump through all of these extra hoops that people that make, you know, Truly and Bon and Viv and White Claw don't have to jump through, is that you get to put that magic word on your can that they don't, tequila. Like you can, you, because it's made with it, you know, as much as spiked seltzers can imply that they're a vodka soda, they can't actually put the word vodka on their labeling because that would be misleading. But you get to actually say this is made with tequila because it is. You know, do you think that really gives you a leg up in the mind of the consumer?
I think it really does. I think the tequila, not just that we're using tequila, but also that we're using 100% agave tequila. So there's the mixto tequilas and 100% agaves, and 100% agave tequilas need to, just like champagne, have a geographic trademark. And so each of these things we've really thought through in how do we make a product that is as transparent and as high quality as possible. So this is tequila from the highlands of Jalisco, and it is bottled over there and imported into the U.S. And it actually, fun fact is it's canned inside a solar powered facility. it's pretty cool. And the juice component is 100% organic juice, not from concentrate, no flavors, no additives. So being able to say those things on our label, we've gone as far as we can to say it on the label. So it is not only on the back of the label, which, as we were talking about, is not required for alcohol. You do not need to list ingredients or nutritional facts. So we have stated it on the front of the can, and it is pretty much the whole packaging design is just the ingredient statement on the front of the can as well as on the back. And then we're a little disappointed with our nutritional panel having to be reduced, but it is there. But yeah.
I'm just so enamored with the idea that all the other stuff that gets crammed into like 2-point font in the back of some other products is the stuff that for you is the major selling point. You're like, no, we want that to be the whole label.
Yeah.
All the stuff that's in it.
That's what excites us. We think that's something that people want to know. You know, they look so closely at the back of products, now they can just see it without, you know, picking up the product.
Well, let's talk about, because you guys are fighting all sorts of good fights all over the place. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Know Your Alcohol campaign, which is a new campaign that you are involved with it. Is this your brainchild, or is this something where you've decided, hey, I'm not fighting enough crusades as of right now. I'm feeling like putting another one on my plate.
House did a really good job in orchestrating, and they're another brand that's also caring about what they're putting into their products, and we wanted to join them and the other brands that are part of this transparency movement. So we did not orchestrate, but we are a proud participant, and I think they did a really good job with making these graphics and making it very digestible of all the things we're talking about. You know, what does natural flavors mean? What's going into these products? So yeah, we're very excited about what we're part of with them.
And so what's the, is this kind of, you know, what you're trying to do with your brand, but not specific to you, just kind of a larger educational campaign to get the consumer to actually, you know, think about and have an understanding of what they're buying before they put it in a glass and then put it in their mouth.
I think it's also just letting consumers know that they can go to the websites, check out these products, learn what's in them. If they aren't saying what's in them, maybe you should question it. Because if the producers are confident and happy with what's in their product, they would say it. And also knowing where the ingredients are grown, and you know how responsible the company is. And I think it's a growing movement, and it's something that has been present in skincare and beauty, but that is really growing in the food industry and now in the alcohol industry. I think it's only going to go up from here. So
I think it's shocking that this category is, you're allowed to be as mysterious as you can. The fact that you do not need to list ingredients. You know, someone might have nut allergens, and you don't actually need to write whether there's any nut allergens in your product. So that there's such a big opening, and this campaign is really about let's highlight the brands that do care about telling you what's in it, who do care about being transparent in those things, and being a option for you when you're looking to still have some fun, but feel good about what you're choosing. So it's the answer to all of the products that are out there and the mainstream products that have, you know, they may have some little dab of flavor to make just that right age note in that bourbon, or just the right age note in a, you know, whatever spirit you're looking at, but they don't need to list that there. So this is where we think it's a great movement.
Yeah, I think it's important for obviously the spirit world, but it's equally important just for any consumable that you know what you're ingesting. And I think we've gotten so far away from that because we put our, you know, faith in government agencies like the FDA and the TTB to make sure that everything we're eating is safe. But then we kind of forgot that, well, safe doesn't all mean good, right, or good for us. So we've drifted away from that because of our, I don't know, naivete maybe. But you talked earlier about the facility in Mexico being solar powered. And I see in my notes here that you're also working with an organization called Leave No Trace. Can you tie those two things together for me?
Yes. So they actually came together separately. Leave No Trace was something that I was extremely passionate about when we came up with the idea of creating a consumer brand that we wanted to align with being outdoorsy and something you can enjoy really anywhere. You see White Claw cans everywhere. I mean, you see garbage everywhere, and I just did not want to see our cans everywhere. And so we can't control the consumer, but what we can do is we can give back, you know, when possible. So one of my missions when creating the brand and really thinking about what we wanted it to represent was to have a nonprofit angle. And we did a lot of research, and we came across Leave No Trace, which is based in Boulder, and they are focused on education. They're not fighting with these giant nonprofits to donate money to big things. They really believe that education can help make a big change, and I completely agree with that. So they do everything from grassroots cleanups to larger cleanups to letting you know, like, going off trail when you're hiking is really bad for the environment, and how to give back and to really leave no trace in all aspects of being outdoors. So one of the initiatives that we are or we will really start doing when the world normalizes a little bit is cleanups. So in all of our markets, we'll be organizing cleanup events from 5 people to hopefully 1,000 people one day, and just to do a fun cleanup in those markets. And if we're going to be drinking out in a park, to make sure that that park is cleaner than we left it. And it's something that's really simple. But we think that the consumer and the target audience that we're going for really align with that. Being transparent and in being clean, it helps with the consistency across the brand. And that is kind of how we also fell into the solar powered facility, which Chris can speak to more about.
Yeah, the solar powered facility. We saw a few different facilities, and when we came across this one and met the owners and saw that it mattered to them as well to what kind of footprint they were leaving, we felt it was a good partner aligned with the values of the brand. So bringing that sustainable approach is not just a part of our marketing efforts in how we're building a community, but it's also part of the product. So we have the cans themselves are aluminum, of course, which is one of the most recycled resources out there, but also how that aluminum can is filled is with solar power. So we try to be as consistent as possible across the board.
I love that. And I love the focus on just generally across the board of being aware, you know, being aware of what is going into your cans, being aware of what is going into your body, and being aware of what you're putting back out into the environment, you know? And I mean, like Souther was saying, you know, we have trusted organizations like the TTB and the FDA to, you know, regulate things and keep us safe because we have to, you know, we live in a giant pluralistic society and, you know, you can't be constantly monitoring, you know, whether or not everything that you eat is going to, you know, give you trichinosis or salmonella and kill you. But, you know, there's also, you have to be aware of what they do and don't look for and what can sneak in under the line. And on the flip side of that, there's a sort of awareness of like, well, what are you putting back out into the world when you go for a hike or when you go for a barbecue or something like that, you know? And I just love that, that level of, you know, you don't have to be one of these folks that, you know, only eats everything out of the garden behind their, you know, behind where they live to be an aware person who, you know, is just kind of looking out for the environment and by extension of that, kind of looking out for themselves as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think the more information, the more these how would you describe the know your alcohol, the group efforts to educate the consumers are really important for getting information out there and just making everyone able to make informed decisions, especially when it's not super readily available.
That's fantastic. So what's next for Volley? Let me guess. You're tackling climate change, income inequality, and the recession after the pandemic. That's what's next for y'all in the next 6 weeks.
We're trying.
that wasn't real, by the way. We're not expecting any of that of you.
I know.
We're just trying to get our products out to more people. So right now we're in 6 markets. We're in New York, New Jersey, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Kentucky just launched this week. And we've got a few more states, about 5 states opening up over the next 2 months that we're just trying to keep our heads focused and making sure we're opening up those properly and getting the word out. So it's full steam ahead over at Team Volley. So lots of exciting things coming also on the packaging front, but, that's what we're focused on 110% of the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to be an entrepreneur. It's a lot to be an entrepreneur in the spirits category. It's a lot to be an entrepreneur in the spirits category during COVID. Like there's a whole lot going on. But I'm zipping through your website now. I see you've got 4 flavors, zesty lime, spicy ginger, sharp grapefruit, and tropical mango. They all look delightful. I can't wait to get some into my own hands. Where can the people see your work? You got an Instagram handle you want to throw out there?
Yeah, we have a great Instagram called @drinkvolley and then a really funny Twitter That's also at Drink Volley. Highly recommend the Twitter as well as Instagram, but our Twitter account is pretty entertaining. Not a lot of followers there, but each one is highly appreciated and hopefully gets a few laughs.
Yes.
Well, I'll be sure to.
Yeah, and on our website as well, you can. There's a map of where to find our product, and hopefully we'll be in a market nationwide soon.
I can't imagine that there'll be many more hurdles coming your way. I hope not anyway, because it looks like a great addition to the shelf in a market that's, you know, saturated with, again, things that are making you think that they're something that they're not. So it's good to have something on the shelf that's telling you exactly what it is and it's delivering on its promise.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, we're excited to get it out there. So we need all the help in getting the word out.
Well, hopefully this will get it out there some more for you and get you some more attention, which will, of course, draw more demand, and demand results in supply chain, right? So this is just one of the many steps I'm certain that you've gone through to get it there. So really appreciate having you on the show today, Camilla and Chris from Drink Volley. Greg, you got anything else for us?
Not just, you know, try real passion fruit, everybody. It's different, yeah. But it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Thank you, guys. Well, that's it for this week's edition of the Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks so much for tuning in, and you know, look out for Volley products on a shelf coming to you soon. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Souther. Take care.
Cheers,
thank
guys.
You. Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like. Tell your friends. And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.